Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I'm excited to talk to you because there's so much to get into.
Yes, there is.
And your book is the perfect setup for this conversation. So what I, this is real easy. It's, you know, I don't do the, so Joy, tell me your life story. You know, this is going to be just conversation with my sister.
Okay.
I love it. So
that will work. I love it.
We're gonna do this in 3, 2, 1. What up? What up? Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. Yes, I'm still Michael Steele. Yes, I'm still a Republican. Okay, well, we're working on that last part. But here we are after what has been a whirlwind 24 hours or so in the nation's capital, where all eyes were transfixed on the Capitol and the testimony of one Robert Mueller. Yeah, we'll get into that. But before I do, I just want to remind you, you know, you can find me on Stitcher and all those wonderful places where you download your podcast. We'll make sure you do that, because when I say that, everybody is happy behind the scenes. So I've said it, so they should be happy. And hopefully you're happy, too. Well, I'm excited about today because I've got someone I consider a friend. She took in this lowly little wayward Republican chairman and allowed him to be on her shows on MSNBC, and she beat him up pretty badly, and he survived. And here I am welcoming the author of the latest hot seller out there, The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story, is none other than Joy Ann Reid, who is the host of AM Joy, one of the hottest programs on the network at MSNBC. You catch her on weekends from 10 a.m. to noon on MSNBC. And as I said, she's the author of this great new book about the man who sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story. Joy, welcome to the podcast.
Brother Michael Steele, it is so good. See, people need to go in YouTube, because we used to argue
on
Dayside TV, on Alex Wagner's show and all these other shows. We were in a mode where we were like pugilists. But we became friends.
We did. And it speaks to the fact that can actually happen in our politics. You know, we may disagree on a lot of the issues and how we get around the corner, but the fact is we realize we got to get there together, because otherwise it don't work.
Exactly.
And so that's.
And you know what I miss? And I have to say that just talking to you, of course, you were the chairman of the Republican Party, and I miss about your party that we used to be able to have principled debates about issues and disagree. But the reason that you and I have other friends who are Republicans or still Republicans even now, even though they are not fond of Trump, is that that used to be the way it was in our politics. That we were actually arguing about important things, not about like crazy racism and stuff. You know what I mean?
I know, right. Well, some of those issues have, I mean, while they weren't settled, then there were still some unsettled currents to them. In large measure, we realized that those issues around race, around immigration, that there was a natural calling to appeal to something higher, not base instincts. So you kind of, you kind of pull those issues out of that typical political space. You set them aside and you dealt with them. You talked about them. The country kind of learned and grew from it. That's how we survived the 50s and the 60s. That's how a Dr. King is able to not only corral black folks around his idea of America, but to actually pull white folks into that vision as well. and at a time that was very difficult with the president sitting in the White House in Lyndon Johnson, who was no fan of civil rights. I mean, you know, yeah, it took some struggle to get him there, as we know with the Kennedys and as we know even with, you know, Republicans at the time. So it wasn't a settled issue, but that sense of the higher calling, I think, made a difference, which is what I love about your book. And yeah, we're going to get into the Mueller discussion, but folks, I think the way you understand the Mueller discussion is to frame it in the context of what Joy has written in her book. And I think it's profoundly important. And one of the important opening parts of her narrative, and Joy, I want to tee you off on this and get you going on it. You talk about how candidate Trump sold America on a vision that was seemingly at odds with their country's founding principles. And so now he's in office, he's kind of put the for sale sign up on those principles, on those ideas, and on the prestige of the presidency. Talk about that as a foundation of where we are now and what you were trying to drive, not just as a narrative, but as an important message with the man who sold America.
Well, I mean, I think, Michael, that, you know, obviously the country didn't just, you know, go bad on race when Donald Trump became president, right?
We've had,
like we've, you know, most of our founders were slave owners. You know, racism was built into the way the country was founded. All those founding principles that read really well on paper were never written to apply and meant to apply to Black people, were never meant to apply to women of any race. So we know we had issues, right? We always had issues, and we've had really racist presidents in the past. I mean, you know, you talked about the way Lyndon Johnson grew up and the way he even still talked in a racial way when he was president, you know, even when he was doing the right thing.
Right.
You had Richard Nixon that ran a whole campaign based on the Southern strategy. You had Harry Truman who grew up, you know, routinely using, you know, the N-word. We had a lot of presidents that had issues. Lyndon, you know, Andrew Johnson, crazy racist. Andrew Jackson, crazy racist. Like, we've had a lot of them.
Right.
But the difference, I think, with Trump is, number one, that he doesn't seem to agree with what's on paper about America, and that those principles that were written in by the founders, even though they didn't live them, the fact that they wrote them really did, you know, it was even bought into by people who were enslaved. Like, they even saw those principles as important enough that they embraced them the minute they had freedom. And so you had at least every previous president, you know, try to voice those principles and believe in them. Trump doesn't. What Trump believes in is making money. And when he ran for president, he ran as a scheme to make more money in his real estate business, to get a tower in Russia, to increase his net worth, increase his brand. So he was really scamming the country that he even wanted to be president, because he just wanted to get richer. And now that he's in the office, what he's doing is he's taking the racism inside of him, and he's keeping us as much as he can fighting with each other on the basis of race. While what he and his friends and his colleagues and his cronies are doing is robbing the bank. You know, while we're all out here arguing about, you know, while you know, being outraged about him having children in cages, these people are using government to get rich. And they actually are rich. They're using government to get richer. It's a scam.
So
everything he's done is a scam.
Is that how the con comes together, is around this idea? So we sort of give you the pablum of American apple pie, and then you tap into the frustration that people have with the taste of that apple pie. It doesn't taste as sweet as it once did, and nobody understands why. What was the flavor? Oh my God! Did you add a little bit too much pepper, or did you put in, you know, did you put in some chorizo sauce? What did you do? I mean, did you put some salsa in it? Oh my God! You don't put salsa in America in apple pie. You don't do that, because apple pie is apple pie, right?
Right.
So he got us all sort of focused on that. Meanwhile, he's out there selling the, you know, his brand and his organization in a way that benefiting him. So how did we buy into that con? Do we just got caught up in the apple pie idea and just ignored the con, or was there something else beneath it, you think?
I think that Donald Trump took advantage of the fact that obviously the country has some existing challenges when it comes to racism, people's existing discomfort with the country becoming more diverse. He took advantage of it. right? And so he was able to take advantage of people's pre-existing, I would just say the word, let me try to be nice about it, people's discomfort with the way America is changing. And so he was able to take advantage of it to get in office because he just kept picking on it.
Well, no,
and getting
I'll break it down better than that. People are afraid of the country getting black and brown. People are
That's the fear of a black planet.
Yeah. People are afraid. I mean, it's not just America, folks, so we are clear. This is Europe. This is, this is Asia. There's a reason why the Japanese from the very beginning, like, closed off their society and became this homogeneous kind of thing. They were like, no, we doing all this. But I found it interesting, Joy, on that point about how not just America, but the globe is changing. I don't know if you saw the story that came out a few days ago. They were talking about the origins of Europe. Where did Europeans come from? Who are these people? And of course, the concept is that, they just kind of white folks just popped up. Those Europeans, those British and French and whatever, are black and Asian people. It is the people from Asia and the people from Africa that moved into that space. So it really speaks to how, particularly from a black perspective, how we are part of everything. And how much that bothers everyone.
Yeah.
In some sense.
Just the fact that, you know, all around Europe, as you said, this is happening all over the Western world, is that, racism is easy to tag Donald Trump with because he's obviously racist and has been for a long time. But what he and other far right parties are pushing in Europe is not racism. It's white nationalism. You could call it white Christian nationalism. It's this idea that these countries were meant to be white, that only white Christians can really be French, can really be really English, can really be French, can really be Italian, that only white Christians need apply when it comes to citizenship and being true citizens, and that everyone else is an interloper, and that those people shouldn't have any rights, they shouldn't be allowed to stay, they shouldn't be allowed to migrate. That's literally what he's pushing. It's white nationalism. It's worse than racism.
So is that white nationalism then? And I think you touch on this in the world. Actually, it's not touch on. It is part of what you see as the profound social change that occurs that has led us to this point of sort of buying into this idea and accepting that sort of white nationalism. Is that a form of protectionism? Like, I feel so threatened that this thing, white nationalism, makes me feel safer or gives me a port in the storm that's brewing? How does that fit into the social change that you talk about in the book?
Well, I think it's because, I think that for a lot of white Americans, white Europeans, people who were in favor of Brexit, which was largely, similar to the way Trumpism is largely a rural white phenomenon, is that people feel, they look around them and they say, I don't have as much as my parents had. I'm not able to get as far as my parents were able to get. I'm not able to have what I think I deserve. And so the explanation for it that's the easiest is not, technology is changing and I don't know this new technology,
right?
The world is changing around me and I'm not ready for it. I don't have the technical skills, the technological skills. The industries around me are abandoning workers in favor of machines. Like, those are complicated, scary realities to face, and for a lot of people it's just easier to say, nope, it's Mexican, it's these illegal immigrants, it's their fault. And that just, it's just easier for the human psyche to go to that explanation rather than the really complicated things, which would mean I need to be re-educated, I need to go back and I need to learn new technology, I need to move from where I'm comfortable and not live in this state anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to move somewhere else. Like, these are all complicated things. And for a lot of Americans, it's just easier to just blame brown people, blame Muslims, blame other people. And Donald Trump is the guy who, that's how he thinks. And so when he tells people that's how you should think, well, that's very attractive to a lot of people who don't want to deal with reality. So he's able to take people who don't have the creativity or the really, frankly, the courage to think bigger about why they are where they are. And he allows you to think smaller. And it's easy to think small. And that's why he's so successful.
Well, it's easy to think small when you're fearful because you're in that space. But you know, this is a very anti-white analysis, Joy. You realize this is very anti-white analysis, and that you need to be more pro-white in your analysis.
Listen, let me tell you something. My father is African, and he has always thought that, you know, the exact same formula got the Hutu and the Tutsi to massacre each other.
Yep.
It's not only white people
exactly.
who are subject to this kind of simplicity. You know, inside of Rwanda, Hutu and Tutsi are exactly the same when it comes to their ethnicity. There is no difference between a Hutu and a Tutsi. They're mm-hmm. the same ethnicity. But the, you know, and again, I'm sorry, white folks, but Europeans were able to create a fake difference between the two of them. It is really very hard to even tell one from the other because they are the same. But they created this false difference, and then the exploitation of one versus the other made them think, well, the Hutu think the Tutsi are animals. They're not even human.
Right.
You can do this to anybody. It's been done all over the world.
Well, hell, they
for
did it to
time.
Themselves. They did it to themselves. I mean, look at how people treated the Irish when they got to
yes.
America, or you know, look how the British were treated in some parts. I mean, the crap that's gone on for 1,000 years between the French and the English. I mean,
yes.
You know, it's just
yes.
it's the same. It's the same thing. It's just
well, look at the fact, Michael, that the Germans went to slaughter the English, even you know during World War II. And the royal family of England are German.
A German, right?
They're German.
Right.
So
they
the
are.
Idea that I mean, so right. So there's
although,
no.
They don't talk about that much because that whole
we don't talk about that. They're Windsor
thing.
Now.
Yeah, they don't want. Yeah.
Their background was German, so it's easy to do. And like you said, the first time we had a public official say build a wall, it was against Southern Europeans. It was against Italian people and also Irish people. So you can do it to anybody. It's just that right now, it's easier to the way that it works is when you take the majority or you take a minority that's ruling over a majority of another race, like they did in South Africa. It's easy to do. And to tell you the truth, the people who use this technique in order to complete robbing the bank are the very rich.
They've been very good at this.
Well,
wait a minute. So you're saying if I got $1 billion, I want $1.1 billion.
Yes. Greed is it's you and listen, you were a seminarian, so you know it's not money that's the root of all evil, it's
no.
the love of money.
It's like
it's the lust of money.
Yeah. Yep.
And the kind of greed, I mean what the Trump while Trump is caging children and creating a cruelty that even supposed Christians, far right and mostly white Christians, now believe that he is akin to God. They're worshiping him like a god while he's caging children. While he is changing American right-wing Christianity into something God would not recognize, while he's doing that, he and his cronies are getting rich off government. They're hawking away public land to build on for their builder friends. They're going and scoping out public housing to steal, to flip to their friends. They're allowing polluters to save billions of dollars so that they don't have to regulate the gunk they dump into our rivers, into our streams. They're letting them poison us so they can get richer. They handed very rich people $2 trillion that everybody who paid rather than getting a tax refund last time, y'all are paying for it.
Yeah.
They are tricking poor white people into thinking that they're on the team and then having their farm.
Baby, you're just the water boy.
Okay.
You're just the water boy. You're not on the team.
You're not on the team. They're tricking them. They say, look, focus on the brown people. And then when you lose your farm, don't blame us. Blame the brown people. It's a scam.
Even though the brown people are the ones who are working your damn farm.
Hello.
I had my wife and I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, and she was making some really good points on the whole immigration thing. And of course, it got into this. There was what teed us off was the fact that it was a story that come out talking about how, you know, that white folks are kind of looking at, you know, the job markets and they were making this argument that there are all these jobs out here and that, you know, that people just aren't doing them. And I was like, wait a minute. Every time I look at someone driving a lawnmower, I don't see Tad. Tad is not driving a lawnmower. And Buffy is not cleaning someone's home. All right. So,
yeah.
I mean, you're sitting up and complaining about people not, you know, working or whatever. I'm like, wait a minute. Tad's not going to do this work. So who's doing this
right.
work? And so it makes for an interesting. So.
And you know what? By the way, Tamika and Sharnika and them picked your lettuce for 400 years.
Thank you.
So if you really think that the answer is to get rid of the migrants and then let black people pick lettuce and fruit again, baby, we did that for 400 years for y'all for free.
Yeah, for free.
We're not doing that again.
It's going to cost you, I was going to say it's going to cost you a hell of a lot more than reparations to get me to pick some more cabbage. Trust me.
Hello.
You reparate that mofo because I ain't...
That ain't happening.
That ain't not happening. No. I'm sorry. So Tad and Becky, y'all best to warm up the tractor and get the bucket.
Put some sunscreen on. You're going to put a lot of sunscreen on and get out there and start picking because we not
doing. I love y'all. He said y'all want to look like us. You said because I love when they come up and compare their tan to your skin, right? Which is probably one of the most racist things
Easy.
You can do on the planet.
100%. And we go pick some lettuce. You'll look like us in about 30 minutes.
That's right. So where does this go? How do we begin to break this spell that the con has right now in so many folks? And look, I'm an equal opportunity chastiser here because, you know, black folks and Hispanics as well like what Trump is saying. I mean, it doesn't get a lot of coverage, but the numbers may not be, you know, the 50% plus of like educated white women. But, you know, there is this element out there that still buys into it regardless of anything else. So that goes to your argument, I guess, about the economics of it and how the economics kind of drive some of this. So how do you begin to break the spell? What kind of solutions do you see that are readily available to us out there? Otherwise, we go the way of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and the reality is, too, part of the reason Trump is able to get away with so much is he's also a celebrity. As you know, I mean, he's a celebrity. And
right.
so he's famous, and so he gets away with a lot of it because he's famous, and he's not Southern. If he had a Southern accent, I interviewed a guy for the book who said something so smart that I had to quote him, but if Donald Trump was everything he is now but had a Southern accent, he'd have never gotten this far because the racism would have been called out immediately, but the New York media sees him as a fellow traveler. He's one of us. He's a fellow New Yorker, so his racism gets undercut by his celebrity and his being a fellow New Yorker.
Yeah.
You know,
smart
and the media
analysis.
Takes him in a different way than they would a Southerner doing the same thing. So he gets away with a lot partly because the media is docile to him because he's also entertaining. You know, you talked a little bit about the Mueller hearing. Well, Mueller wasn't entertaining enough, so the media savages Mueller as, you know, looking like a geezer because he didn't put on a show. And now, you know, it's as if reality TV has taken over everything. And even the way we look at politics, we look at it like sports or entertainment. So if it's not entertaining, it's no good, even if the substance is good. So I think the Democrats have a challenge in that they are not good at showbiz. Republicans are. And so other than
Which
Barack
is ironic,
Obama,
because given all the showbiz friends that Democrats
they're
have,
all Democrats.
You would think that they would have a farm team.
I said this to Donnie Deutsch, who's a long time, and you know Donnie. Donnie's
yep.
a long time advertising guy. And I said, Donnie, all of the celebrities, all the big stars, not the B-listers who Trump tagged along with, you know, those poor people like Kid Rock that are like
right.
C-listers that hang out with him.
Right.
All the A-list celebrities are all Democrats. They're all liberals. Why is it that the Democratic Party is so bad at showbiz? Can't they just call someone in Hollywood and say, help us with message? They could call anyone. There's
right.
so many people they could call that are filmmakers, that are directors, actors, writers. Those are all their friends. So why don't you guys let Hollywood help you create a message? Because Republicans who have no connection to Hollywood and who get mad because they feel rejected, just like Trump does, by Hollywood and the Hollywood elite, they're pissed off. They have no connection. But yet they're so good at messaging. So I think one challenge the Democrats are going to have beating Trump is that they're not good at the marketing aspect of politics and not good at the messaging and the showbiz. Because you can, you know, a Republican who I won't name because he's I like him to make money, so I don't want to ever name him too much as my friend because I don't want his party to cut him off financially.
Right.
He's a good friend of mine. I mean, they already mad at you. So I can make
they so pissed at me. It doesn't even. Yeah. They fired my ass. Just remember, folks, what happened here.
After I won,
and then they were like, right, he couldn't raise money, or he spent. Look, this was what I love. He can't raise money, but he spent too much money. Okay, which is it?
Too much of it.
Tell me which it is, because I can't do both.
Okay. Hey, listen, the door of the church is open, brother. You can come over to the Democratic Party anytime. We can talk about that off air.
Nah, y'all crazy as hell over there, too. So.
But I don't understand why Democrats are so bad at messaging and marketing. So they need to improve on that.
So you were saying this Republican that you were talking to.
Yeah, said to me, you can't beat showbiz without showbiz. So Donald Trump is show business. He's a reality show. Democrats in 2020 are not going to be able to beat him by coming out with a 1990s era message about healthcare, something bland about healthcare that isn't even strong because you don't want to scare people too much. You're afraid of white working class voters, so you make it really soft and gentle, and you sort of hide behind the draperies and hope that voters accidentally trip over and voted for you while they're headed to vote for Trump. That is not how you beat him. You know what I mean?
Like, I just fell into it.
I fell over and voted for you by accident. That's how they think they're going to win. No, the fact that they won't impeach Trump tells me they do not understand this game. If Republicans, if you guys had what they have on a Democratic president, y'all would have been impeached him and had a whole impeachment show on TV for the last 4 months.
Oh, yeah.
All we will be talking about is impeachment and how bad this Democratic president is. If you had a Democratic president who's friends with not one but two pedophiles, y'all would have destroyed this Democrat. And so I'm envious of the Republican.
And look, we're about to nominate another one and pull it back up in Alabama.
You got to grab one and pull it and still, without any sense of irony, run in favor of him. So Democrats don't know how to do that and don't know how to hang together. So I think Democrats need three things. I think they need messaging and marketing. That's one. Number two, they need discipline. Democratic voters will be like, I feel a little tired this morning. I'm not going to vote. You know what? I don't feel like I got a pony from Barack Obama, so I'm not going to vote. You know what I mean? Like, Democrats have no discipline, no team spirit. They need to fix that. And then number three, and this I don't understand, because Jesse Jackson was a Democrat, and he registered like 2 or 3 million voters running for president twice. Register voters.
Yeah.
Can you register some voters? They won't do it. I don't get it.
I find that part to be the most fascinating of it, is that a lot of the thinking, at least among the circles that I still get to hang out in from time to time, is that that the Democrats do have this voter registration machine that, that the party Republicans don't have, because you've got all these third party organizations that typically will pitch in and fill in, from Rock the Vote to whatever. And so from a Republican perspective, it's always this view that you guys have got this. But I think you put your finger on the thing that is the most essential difference between the two parties. Republicans have finally, from the base grassroots level, gotten the leadership to focus on the one thing that mattered to them more than anything else, and Trump being the master brander, the master reality TV kingpin, focused on it and delivered, and that is the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And that is the thing. That's the bright shining object, the battle line that for Republicans make a difference, because as we realized many years ago, presidencies are but 4 years. A Supreme Court appointment is a lifetime. It goes beyond any Democrat or any Republican president and their administrations, and the impact of that. And here's where Republicans also feel that they've been burned in the past, that those Republican appointments have typically wound up being more center left than right. And I think, as much as they hate to hear this, that is going to continue to play out. And here's, why? Because those Republican appointees, if they are true constitutionalists, if they're a true adherence to the rule of law and all the things that Republicans say are important that they want to see in their justice, when those cases land before them and they apply that standard, they're going to rule the way they have, which is why you had our Chief Justice Roberts rule not once but twice for keeping Obamacare, and which is why on you're going to see the same thing from Gorsuch and the same thing from Kavanaugh.
Really? You think so?
Roe versus Wade will be the law of the land 10 years from now, 20 years. Trust me on that. Because the reality of it is these men respect the institution. They respect things like stare decisis, which is part of what holds Roe in place. And the other thing is, in order to undo Roe, which no one's talking about, you've got to go back and pull away from a right to privacy, because that's one of the underpinning foundations for Roe.
Right, right.
You've got to find that there is no right to privacy in the Constitution.
Yeah.
Now, I can make the argument, I don't think that there is, but after 40 years of jurisprudence around that principle that's upheld it and sustained it, these justices aren't going to be that willy-nilly to go in and pull that particular rug out. So I just think that that dynamic, and I said all that to sort of set up this point about the Democrats. What is that thing that is going to galvanize your base to go out and vote regardless of what they think about the nominee personally? Because y'all still fighting out that Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders thing.
Yes, absolutely. They're still fighting. Right. And I think that's the problem, is that Democrats don't have that true north that Republicans have, that it's all about the court. And they haven't realized how important the court even is. They won't even defend, because I think Democrats take for granted that the court is always going to do the right thing, because in their mind, the Supreme Court is Brown versus Board of Education or Roe v. Wade.
Right.
They don't think past that.
Right.
So they think all of these rights that the previous courts, as you said, even with Republican nominees, gave us are permanent. And especially young Democrats, they don't understand that they're so temporary, and that, you know, just a shift, add one more Clarence Thomas, because I'm sorry, but your friend Clarence clearly doesn't believe there's a right to privacy or anything else. I mean, I almost think Clarence would rule for slavery if it came before him.
Oh, no, say that
so
about Clarence. No.
I'm sorry. I don't even understand.
I know he doesn't like affirmative action, but he's not going to.
He doesn't like anything for black people. He doesn't like black people, as far as
well, no, that's not true. Stop.
Talk to him, because he don't talk back. The good thing about talking to him is he don't talk back. So you just talk to him, he's silent.
I just talked to him recently. He talks back. He's a good
Did
man.
Did he fake, though? Oh, that's interesting. So you have people on the court. And I picked on Clarence, but the reality is that what Republicanism was when my father, even though he wasn't an American citizen, was very Republican.
Right.
He was very Reaganite, and he liked George W. Bush. Like, he was very Reaganite, although he was thrilled when Obama won, because he's like the son of Africa. He loved that idea of Obama. But he was a Republican. And the challenge now is that the Republican Party, even though it had racist elements before, I mean, Reagan did start off in Philadelphia, Mississippi, give a wink and a nod to this, the Southern far right that they had pulled in after Nixon. But you didn't have a president from the presidency doing this kind of crazy. I can't imagine either of the Bushes like speaking this way to white people from the presidency. Like, you can't imagine that ever before. So I think the Republican Party has become so extreme that, to your point, when the cases come up before the Supreme Court, there are people on there that I think of are extremists. I think Clarence Thomas is an extremist. And these people they sort of seem to want a nation that's ruled out of the Old Testament. They seem to want to set the country not back to the Constitution, but to the Old Testament. And that's very extreme, even for most Republicans. So I worry that if Donald Trump gets a 6-3 court, he'll give us more of that. And then we will have both the Congress, which in many ways is cowardly toward autocracy, the White House in the hands of an autocrat, and a Supreme Court that is extremist. Then we go backward. And I think that the next election, honestly, and we always say this is the most important election ever, but I think this one really is. Because if Donald Trump gets away with blatantly teaming up with a foreign adversary to gain the office, and then gets away with it because Congress is too cowardly to stop him, and the court is too extreme to stop him, we then pretty much have an autocrat. We're not the America that was founded the way it was, on at least the idea that we're a free society. Then we really have a king, which is the one thing the founders really feared,
I mean, I get what you're saying, and I understand a lot of that, but he'd be a, quote, king that was voted on by the people. He would have won the election fair and square. And just put
or
that,
or with the help of other foreign governments.
The only reason I say this is because there has been no evidence produced, and this is a perfect segue into the Mueller testimony, particularly given your book is sort of the backdrop to that, and how mm-hmm. it sort of plays into the sort of cultural view of these institutions. But there has been no evidence to show that any vote was changed in this country because of what the Russians did. Now, maybe minds were
changed. Well, I don't know about
that. Maybe minds were changed before they went to the ballot box. But I don't think mm-hmm. that we've shown anything, or at least I've not seen any evidence produced that says that what the Russians really did was, impacted votes that had already been cast.
So here's the challenge with that, is that that's not what Robert Mueller was investigating. So we actually haven't
had. No, he wasn't. That's true.
I give you that. Right. So we've never had a federal investigation of that, because this administration and this Congress, particularly the Senate, Mitch McConnell, won't allow there to be an investigation of that, because Mitch McConnell doesn't want to know the answer, because Mitch McConnell was also helped by it. His party gained more power. I think we have a problem that they don't. And you have a Republican Party that doesn't want to stop it from happening again. And it is going to happen again. So that's my challenge, is that we don't know. They were in 26 different election systems. What did they do? We don't know.
Yeah, I just don't. Again, those 26 election systems have not reported out any abnormalities with the vote in those systems.
Because they're Republican governorships who don't want to change. They have power. My worry is that what we've lost, and we don't know the answer to this question, but that what we've lost is the consensus among both Democrats and Republicans that we should choose our own leaders. My concern with your party, my friend, is that they're more concerned with power than with patriotism. At this point, they don't care how they get power. And that's what worries me. You should care how you get it. A lot of, like I said, there have been previous presidents, including Bill Clinton and others, who played on race in order to get power. And you should care about how you get it. And when you're in power, you shouldn't keep on using the bad things to keep power.
I worry
that Republicans don't care.
Well, and that's part of my battle with a lot of Republicans, is that they do give off that vibe in a very, very strong way. That they don't give a shit anymore about the very principles that define not just the party but the country, that both Democrats and Republicans thought and believed are foundational and important to sustaining this idea of America. I get that, but I don't. Again, and I agree, there's not been an investigation at that level of any import, but I don't believe, at least in the 16th cycle. We'll see, and I think that there's concern, legitimate concern about the 20 cycle, particularly given the president's sort of carte blanche, okay, y'all, you just come and do what you want to do attitude. That there was some shenanigans with the vote, 3,000 votes in this precinct shifting from Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. That's what I'm talking about. That's the baseline, in your face, crass corruption of the voting process when that happens. And if you allow a foreign agent like a Russia to be the manipulator of that, then that just compounds the problem even more so, I think. But
let me ask you this question, here's the challenge. So I'm rereading the Mueller report, and part one of it is chilling.
You need to get a life. You need to spend more, time with your children. I know you do.
You know I have no life. But the thing that's so terrifying about it is all the ways, instances, repeated aggressive ways in which Russians kept coming to Trump people. They went to different Trump people.
But can't you see the innocence of that, though? Wasn't that just all very innocent?
No, I don't. And when you have people constantly saying the Russian government wants to help your dad or help your candidate win, and they keep saying it, and they keep saying, let's try this, let's try that, let's try your campaign manager, let's try this advisor, let's try the son. They were coming at the Trump people constantly.
So why haven't we gotten that?
How come
we don't know that? How come that doesn't register?
It's in the report.
People?
It's in the report. And I think the reason it doesn't register, I have to be honest with Republican voters, is they don't care how they got power. They hated Barack Obama so much.
Yeah, but it's not just Republican voters. A hell of a lot of Democrats voted for Donald Trump, too.
The numbers are in the book. Donald Trump won the same percentage of Democrats, roughly, that are registered as Democrats. Like, you think of Northern Florida, quote unquote, Democrats. They vote Republican. There always are a certain percentage of people who vote across the line.
Right.
That happens.
Right.
And there were 7 million Obama voters who just didn't vote at all. So there was, you know, so Donald Trump didn't get an extraordinary percentage.
That's a vote for
Trump.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
He did, no, it isn't. There are people who just felt left out of the process for whatever reason. They just didn't want to vote.
But if they're Democrats, that's my point.
They just didn't vote. Right. And for, you know, Democrats are undisciplined. And you had some that were like, I don't like either person, et cetera.
Right.
The Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, only get 88% of the black vote. The rest of that vote didn't go to Trump. A lot of it didn't come out. So you had a lot of people not vote at all because they were disgusted by the whole thing. And by
so
both
what happens
of the
next
candidate.
Time?
I worry that we're going to have not just Russia, because if you listen to the end of the Mueller hearing, they also talked about Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates also trying to get involved in the election. It was like a little codicil at the end. It was kind of a throwaway thing.
Right.
I was like, wait a minute. So I think that there's going to be multiple countries getting involved to help Trump next time. I don't think it's just going to be Russia. And I think we're going to have a flood of foreign influence all over this election. The NRA is kind of dying, but remember, they took in like 30 million from Russians. So we're going to have an election that isn't just Americans voting. It's going to be Americans plus all kinds of nefarious foreign entities and countries trying to get involved to help him. And Democrats are only going to have their poor marketing, their poor messaging, and their poor discipline to fight against what, half a dozen foreign entities trying to help this president stay in office. I'm not sure the Republic can stand that, and I'm not sure the average American cares enough about it and is worried enough about it. That's what I worry about, is the nonchalance of average Americans having foreign countries help us decide who is our president. To me, that's a bottom line for me. I don't care if the person's a Republican or a Democrat. Let us pick them. Let us pick who it is. Don't have foreign countries getting involved in who is the president of the United States. I'm offended by that as an American, and I'm shocked that more Americans aren't offended.
So one of the things we heard yesterday during the Mueller hearing was basically enough that frustrated both sides, that some people said, well, Mueller did what he wanted to do. But he, on the obstruction of justice part, which really, I think, more than anything else, hangs, you know, rope around the feet and the arms and legs of the president. That discussion didn't go as well, in my view, as the one around what we're just talking about, the foreign influence, the Russians' interference, etc. Why do you think that was? Was it because of the presentation by Mueller? Was it what was it that was so frustrating for so many people when you looked at those two parts of the narrative from Mueller?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit of a critic of my own industry here. I think part of it was that the media sets everything up now in the age of Trump as a television program. And because Mueller wasn't delivering on the TV performance, they were panning him because they're watching hours of him not perform in their way theatrically the way they wanted to see it. So I found that really kind of dumb. I have to be honest. I don't like the idea that we're critiquing his performance rather than what he did. I was sort of on my own with Walter Schaub and a few other people who watched it, Neil Katyal, in saying that I think Robert Mueller actually delivered everything that the Democrats needed in his first set of answers, because he was asked very perfunctorily. Remember, no collusion, no obstruction.
Right.
My question is, did he knock that down? Yes. His very first answer, he is asked, did you exonerate the president? And he had a very simple answer. No. Okay. He's asked later on in that same obstruction hearing, could the president be prosecuted? Could a president be prosecuted after he's out of office for obstruction of justice? Yes. He gave very definitive one-word answers to those very key questions. When it came to Republicans, they kept trying to take him off on this journey about Strzok and Page. They asked him about the dossier, all sorts of other stuff. When he answered them, he could have also given them one-word answers that were useful. When they said, were Strzok and Page against the president, he could have said, yes. You know what he said? I can't answer that. When he's asked, did you form this, did the whole investigation spur from the dossier? He could have said, yes. He said, I can't answer that. He gave them nothing. So I thought, I was, you know, people didn't agree with me, but I thought that he gave Democrats all they needed right there on obstruction. Because I used to work in local news. all that local news and local newspapers were going to report, they weren't going to report the 8-hour festivity. They're going to report on the key answers. And the key answers are, did the Russians interfere? Yes. Who did they interfere to help? Trump. Did Donald Trump, did you exonerate Trump on the crime of obstruction of justice? No. Could he be prosecuted? Yes. Those are the four clips. That's all people are ever going to see. On those answers, my man indicted Donald Trump.
So why don't we get that?
Because the media are theater critics. At this point, the media are theater critics. They were bored watching 8 hours of this. And so their boredom becomes the story rather than the substance of what he did, because we all become theater critics. It's all supposed to be entertaining TV. Why do you think don't let people cut to Trump and play him for hours and hours? It's entertaining. And the media doesn't seem to have a stake in it. To them, it's all sports. It's all a show.
But then they sit there and they complain about that, though. Then they sit there and complain about how he trashes them and call them fake news and that they should be cut down. But yet I agree with you. I just wanted you to flesh it out. Let me shut up, because the girl's going to take it where I think she's going to take it. Because I agree 1,000% with you. I watched it up close and personal in the 15-16 time frame, as, you know, Trump would tweet something and he's on the air. It's 20 minutes. And then it's the rest of the day talking about that dumbass tweet from 9 a.m. What is it? Are we that? And I guess it goes back to what we were talking about in the book, about this idea of how we're gullible, how we buy the con, we buy into the con, and we give credence to the con, thinking we're smarter than the con man, but we're actually not. We're actually suckers for what he's doing.
Right. The reason that cons work, when somebody gets that email from Nigeria saying, send me your bank account number and I'll send you $1 million, is because you want $1 million. Like, cons don't work when they're offering you something you don't want. And unfortunately, the show business of Donald Trump, just like this, to me, ridiculous show, The Apprentice, which I never watched.
I thought it was a dumb idea, too.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't find that entertaining. But people want to be conned. People wanted to believe he was a billionaire when he wasn't. They wanted to believe he was up from nothing and that it was this great American story of a kid from Queens who became a billionaire through his own efforts, rather than that he just inherited a bunch of money from his daddy and then lost it. And then because he was white, you know, banks were like, lend him more money.
Was the part that killed me. They were still giving this sucker billions of dollars.
That's right. And Jared, too. Jared, like, he took out a $1 billion loan for a building he couldn't even get any tenants for. They're like, you know, lend him some more. You know, that's why privilege, like, on steroids. But people wanted to believe the story because the story is pleasing. And the media, I think, enjoys the con in a certain extent. It's entertaining. It gives you ratings. It's selling newspapers. It's getting people to subscribe to the New York Times. They're in on it in a sense that he is benefiting them. And so, unfortunately, in media, there are only a few people who are in this, as I am, to say this is the Republic. That my commentary on Donald Trump is not to entertain. I'm afraid of this guy. I think what he's doing is scary. I think it's undermining and undoing a project that, I'm not a neoconservative, but I agree with them that the American principle, yes, it's been misapplied. Yes, we've had terrible racism. We had slavery. All that's true. But the principle of what America is supposed to be is what it has organized the Western world since World War II. We have organized the world. And by the way, there's no one else who can do it. Britain is on its back right now with Brexit. Germany doesn't want the job because World War II. France can't do it. Canada can't do it. God bless them. They can't.
Right.
We're the only country that has the capability, the military, and used to be the moral capability to organize this world. And I'm afraid of what the world looks like without any American leadership. And that is now gone. We have no more moral authority. We have only our military authority. People are terrified we're going to use to now. Trump says he could obliterate Afghanistan. So now we have a president threatening other countries the way Kim Jong-un does. What is this world going to be without any American leadership? I'm scared. So I'm worried that the media and other people, God bless them, I don't think they mean any wrong. I don't think they're scared, Michael. Yeah. I don't think they're scared. I think they're entertained. And I'm scared of that.
Yeah. There are some comparisons in history where the populace became infatuated and entertained by a leader who had an adept ability to go out and sing the song that people wanted to hear. And then when they realized what the lyrics were and that the melody was really off, it was too late. It was too late. One last thing before I let you get out of here. And it kind of speaks to everything we're just talking about. So the Justice Department sent Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a letter from the Deputy Attorney General, Jeffrey Rosen, that said that both Bill Barr, the Attorney General, and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, didn't commit a crime when they defied the congressional subpoenas that were seeking information about the 2020 census. So therefore, the department would not bring the congressional contempt citations before a grand jury or take any other action to prosecute the Attorney General or the Secretary. So y'all out there, if y'all get a subpoena for somebody, y'all don't have to show. It's not a crime if you don't show up, if you don't honor the subpoena. Oh, by the way, when they come for your ass, you may have some splaining to do. But just so you know, all y'all folks out there, just be aware that the rules are different for Wilbur Ross and Bill Barr.
And because, William Barr, between him and Speaker McConnell, I think they might be the two most dangerous men in America. Because, you know, for Mitch McConnell, there is no law, there is no morality, there is no patriotism. There's just give us the courts. They just want the court. They don't care who's in the White House to give it to them. That's all he cares about is power. There's only power. That's it. Power.
Well, it'll be his legacy. His legacy will be, I got us a 6-3 court. Or
that's it.
Potentially a 7-2 court.
Yep, that's all he cares about. And he cares about power. For William Barr, there is no law. There is just Donald Trump. When I see William Barr, all I think of is two words, Hail Hydra. If you watch those comic books, and I open the book likening Trump to a comic book villain, if you want to add to the Marvel, add Marvel Universe in, because of course Batman and Joker are DC Comics universe.
Right.
But if you want to toddle on over to the Marvel Universe, think about the people who said Hail Hydra in those comics. There's no law. There's no right or wrong. There's no religion. Everything is Trump. Trump is everything. He is God. He is king. He is master. Nothing matters but him. And they don't feel that they have to abide by any law that would hurt him. They think they can flout any law that would touch him. All William Barr exists to do is to protect Donald Trump and to amass more power in the process. This is not a man who cares about you, me, the law, the Constitution. Hail Hydra. That is who William Barr is. And that is terrifying to me as somebody who thinks this is supposed to be a democracy. And he is so quietly dangerous because I think Donald Trump could commit an open felony and he would find a way to excuse it and to let him go. That's who he is. And that's who our attorney general is.
Well,
we're in trouble.
Well, we certainly know that you wouldn't be able to indict him for whatever he did.
And they're not going to.
They're
no
not going to do that.
And in an autocracy, the dictator is above the law.
Do you think they revisit at some point by force of Congress? Well, again, that assumes a lot about the Congress. That they'll revisit this whole, a president is not indictable. Because here's the problem. If you can't indict a president for criminal activity, and there's a Justice Department memo that states such, and the statute of limitations runs out on that crime, right? It's sometime at the beginning of his second term. What do you do? You can never bring that charge to that individual. And as we saw with Bill Clinton, yes, you can bring a president in, subpoena him, put his ass down in a chair. You can even draw blood for him, which they did for Bill Clinton. So I don't understand. I've yet to figure out what it is about Trump that make people feel that he's so untouchable.
He's untouchable because the framers of the Constitution said they left out whether or not you could indict a president. That's not in the Constitution.
Right.
But they left away that one body in our, because remember, the Attorney General is in the same Article 1 as the president. But
right.
Secondly, he's the boss of the person who would indict him. That's awkward. So the fix for that is that there is one body that can indict him. It's called the House of Representatives, and the indictment is called impeachment. Impeachment is just the indictment of the president of the United States,
right,
where the grand jury is the House. So if the House refuses to use that indictment, we have a House now, a Democratic House, that will not issue that indictment. Well, then in that case, the president could go and order his minions to rob a Brinks truck, put the money in his house, not let the people who did the robbery go to prison, even though he's an unindicted co-conspirator in the crime, and then pardon himself. And I am quite confident.
You just described Watergate. You just described Watergate. I mean, because that essentially
would have been legal. Yeah.
That's essentially what
under
that,
this regime. Yeah. And I am not confident that the majority, and you are more generous to them than I am. I think the 5-member Republican Supreme Court majority would allow Trump to pardon himself. So again, if Trump wants to rob a Brinks truck, the guys who rob the Brinks truck get indicted. He is an unindicted co-conspirator. He then pardons himself and walks away. If this president is not indicted, I think we then 100% have a king, because that means the president is literally above the law. Because if Trump is not impeachable, no president is impeachable. Nothing. He can do any crime, and he will be then free to commit crimes in the open in his second term. And I have no doubt that he will.
Ain't America great?
It is just great.
Ain't America great? There you go. That's something. We're
God
all
bless
about,
America.
We're all about the future, baby.
Yeah, it's looking bright.
In the future, you can do whatever you want. I'm telling y'all out there, if you get a subpoena, don't show up. Just don't, you know.
Tell them Michael said it was okay.
Yeah, no. Tell them Trump said. Trump said.
Fair.
Trump put
fair.
Out a blanket
Trump
thing.
No,
and if you have a problem, all you do call the White House and use their counsel, because as a private citizen, you can use White House counsel to go and sit in depositions and other hearings with you. So you're good.
The no American fees, and then you declare executive privilege and keep it moving.
That's
You'll
right.
Be fine.
Now my wife said we have executive privilege, and I'm sorry, I can't testify to that. This is even bigger than the spousal privilege. No, this is executive privilege that comes directly from my woman. That's how that works. The book is The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story. The author is the incomparable Joy-Ann Reid, who's the host of AM Joy. Folks, do yourself a good favor. You get up on a Saturday and Sunday morning. Now, you go to church before or you go to church after. So I'm not going to tell you. That's how we do Sundays, right? But you get yourself a nice cup of coffee. You get in that comfortable chair and you turn on at 10 a.m. MSNBC and watch this woman do her thing in a way that is smart, that is funny, engaging. And trust me, you will walk away a little bit more knowledgeable and a little bit more interested in what's going on in your world. And that's because of Joy-Ann Reid. Joy, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Michael. And by the way, if you watch AM Joy, you may catch Michael Steele.
Yes.
And if you read the book, you'll read a couple of Michael Steele's thoughts.
Yes, I'm working my way to those ones. Look, I've become somewhat infamous in recent book telling. So I apparently have this penchant for saying some things in books that probably, well, that's a whole nother show.
You're blunt, brother. You're blunt.
Thank you, Joy, so much for being on. And folks, don't forget you can download this episode and so many more from the Michael Steele podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts on. You can find me on Twitter at Michael Steele, and definitely check out Joy, who has an enormous following on Twitter at Joy Ann Reid. That's R-E-I-D. Again, love having her on. Love your listening. Stay tuned for the next episode. We'll be back, you know, because I just love this too much. We're having fun. Later, y'all. Out. We'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.